Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters Radio.
Good morning. I'm Michelle Matthews, your host of Growth Matters, and here we are with another edition on a somewhat gloomy Friday morning here in Atlanta. The word for the week has been burr. It's been much colder than I would have thought it was at this time of year. So this morning we have two guests that I'm excited to get into the types of things that they're doing, because each of them have a very interesting space that they occupy. We have Chris Morocco, who is the CEO of KidsLink, and KidsLink is an Atlanta-based organization that has developed an online service to help parents get better organized. So it's actually an app that allows parents to import, aggregate, and share documents such as birth certificates and immunization records, etc., that they can work on, you know, really anytime, anywhere, which is what technology needs to be today. And so it's a relatively new organization, and we're excited to have you here, Chris.
Well, we're glad to be here and talk more about KidsLink and why growth matters in relation to us expanding our business.
Great. And then also this morning we have Belinda Stubblefield, who is the executive director of Atlanta's Year Up. And Year Up is somewhat of a startup. It's in its first initial couple of years, and it was launched in 2009. And what Year Up does is provide young adults ages 18 to 24 with technical, professional, and communication skills in areas such as information technology, project coordination, etc. And what is neat about this program is students earn college credit for completing coursework that they do during the first 6 months of the program. And then they go on to participate in an internship for the second 6 months, really setting them on a solid foundation for moving forward. So we're excited to have you here, Belinda. Welcome.
Thank you very much. We're excited always to talk about Year Up and the progress we're making in the lives of young adults here in the greater Atlanta area.
Yeah, so why don't I just let you follow up, Belinda. Tell us a little bit, sort of that thumbnail sketch of Europe and what it does to impact the lives of young adults.
Sure. Well, in short, we literally take young adults and help them move from poverty to a professional career in just 1 year. And we've had great success doing that. Our first 6 months with them really focuses on intensive training in technology, both hardware and software, also project coordination, business communications, and importantly, the professional skills, showing up on time, being ready to learn, really focused on delivering what's asked of you, ultimately knowing how to dress appropriately for the business environment, shaking hands, looking someone in the eye, learning how to network, the things that some unfortunately have not had access to, but makes a huge difference in their ability to obtain a position and keep that position. And then the second 6 months allows them to apply the skills that they've learned in a real-world environment with one of our corporate partners. A six-month internship really allows our corporate partner not only to have someone come up to speed, but really add value during the course of that 6 months and evaluate them. And at the end of the 6 months, they're able to hire them for no additional cost or fee. So it's a great opportunity for employers as an entry-level skilled pipeline of talent.
Great, and I know that in running a business or running an organization, the talent is key, and how you find them and know that they're going to fit in with the culture of your organization and have the skills. So that's great. And we're going to dive a little bit more into kind of the challenges and the successes that go along with that. So Chris, give us that thumbnail sketch of KidsLink and what it offers to parents.
Well, KidsLink, our long-term vision is so that moms and dads, parents, will never have to fill out another form again. And that's a daunting task for parents today, just managing and keeping track of information as it relates to their kids, whether it be registration or applications. What we've developed is what we call an app for moms, but it's really a family management platform. And it is designed to aggregate information on your children and pull it up into one, let's call it, family dashboard, and allow parents to manage that information, capture it, and then share it with the organizations that their children are involved in. So it's got some components and elements of like a LinkedIn, which allows you to manage a business profile, You can do the same for your kids, and it has a little bit of slice of Evernote, which is almost a vault for you to store that information and make it easy to access it, whether you're on your computer, on your iPhone, or your tablet.
Yeah. So I'm not a parent, but I'll just give you a little bit of a alert that I did have some of my friends look at your app, and so I have a couple of questions that they suggested I might ask you this morning. But also, before we dig deep into kind of what each of you are doing and how you're growing, let's talk a little bit about your career, because our listeners are always interested in sort of our guests, how do they get to where they are? So I always like to call it the nickel tour. Chris, give us the nickel tour of your experience.
Well, my career has been entrepreneurial. And I've always been involved in early stage startups, really since I started and graduated from Clemson. I started in commercial real estate business, but I was involved with a company that was launching, spinning off of a separate real estate company, and that led me to a number of different ventures. One of my first startups was that I was directly responsible for was a plastics recycling business. And somehow I moved from there to the franchising business, spent a number of years launching a couple brands and growing brands, part of a portfolio of franchise brands. And Planet Smoothie was one of them, and Shane's Rib Shack and PJ's Coffee. And so some of the listeners might have enjoyed using some of those products. And then also spent some time in between that in technology, and then recently got back involved into technology with KidsLink. I guess the commonality between all of the businesses that I worked on were all, as I said earlier, startups and early stage and really innovative businesses. If you go back to the plastics recycling business, I was involved in that in the mid-90s, and so that was pretty much ahead of this of the green movement and what was taking place, what is taking place today. And then with Planet Smoothie, we were trying to do things a little bit differently in terms of health and wellness and serve a healthy meal in a cup. And then with KidsLink, we believe we're really on the forefront in providing a tool for mom to manage her world. And there's just not a lot out there for mom. There's a lot out there for businesses. There's a lot of dashboards for CEOs and VP of purchasing managers, but there's nothing really out there for mom to roll up all of the administrative workload and all the activities that are associated with managing her children.
Yeah, I love to hear executives in their story, because I think a lot of times, particularly people that are younger in their career, or even where they've been laid off or something happens, it's hard for people to think, can I make transitions into different areas? And so both of our guests this morning, clearly, Chris, you've kind of outlined that. But Belinda, in a similar way, I think you've done a number of different things. So tell us a little bit about your career and how you got to Europe.
Sure. Actually, my career started off in a really traditional corporate track. I started out with IBM in sales and worked for Procter & Gamble and Nestle in marketing. And then actually was asked to take a unique position in diversity. And I was vice president of diversity for Nestle. And it was, in a sense, a risk, because at that time, diversity roles were very new in corporate America. But I felt like I could really make a difference, and I decided to take that chance to shift my focus for a couple of years. And it really paid off, because I got to know the entire organization and really make a difference across the organization versus just in my marketing arena. And when I went to Delta Airlines, I actually shifted back to marketing and yet ended up leading the diversity efforts there as well under Leo Mullen. I was vice president of diversity as well. And at Delta, realized operations was really the driver there, and I asked to move into an operational role, and I led Delta's largest call center, leading about 1,700 employees, and then led our customer care. So my professional career was unique in that I had a lot of different areas underneath my belt, but at the same time, kind of parallel paths. I was doing a lot from a community standpoint around young children and young adults. So as early as college, I was tutoring young men in a prison camp. I worked with kids who had been abused. I'm a foster mom today. I've worked in a number of nonprofits, leading at the board level. I was vice chair of development for Credibility, formerly Consumer Credit Counseling Service, Credit Counseling Service of Greater Atlanta, and I also was board chair there. So I have a number of different skills that I think really help place me well at Year Up, because I have the professional and the business skills to lead really what is a complex business, but also understanding these young adults and where they're coming from and where they're trying to go. Because they're all very motivated, very interested, very engaged, hardworking. They need the skills, and they need the opportunity, and that's what Year Up helps to bridge the opportunity divide.
Yeah, well, both of you are with organizations and businesses that are, as you said, in a startup mode. And so what are some of the biggest challenges that you face as you're trying to bring up an organization or come into an organization that's relatively a startup mode? And, you know, either one, give us your perspective.
Sure. Well, Year Up Atlanta was established in 2009, as you mentioned. And one of the biggest things, of course, is getting our name out there and letting people know what we do. Literally, our program is free for these young adults. And yet, right now, we have 1,200 students apply for about 170 spaces each year. And that's with very little outreach and communication, relatively speaking. But obviously, we want to let more and more people know, because we know the need is vast. We also are trying to make sure major corporations here in Atlanta know what we're doing and have the opportunity to tap into these young adults as resources. We have partners such as the Coca-Cola Company, Gas South, Bank of America, SunTrust, really brand names here in Atlanta who see the value in the students that we offer to them for internship. But at the same time, in order to provide these services to more and more young adults, we need to make sure more corporate partners engage with us and take advantage of these entry-level talented young adults. So to me, as a new organization, not only making sure our program is successful, which it is, almost 84% of our young adults, when they graduate, are placed in a full-time professional position within 4 months of graduating, the most recent class within 2.5 months.
Oh,
so we
impressive.
Have the results. But making sure people know we're here, know what we're doing, knowing that it is really an opportunity for them to engage with us for the benefit of their business.
Yeah. Chris, what are, you know, from your perspective, for our listening audience, particularly since you've done a lot of different startups, what's the biggest challenge you face?
I would say the biggest challenge I faced and continue to face with what we're working on today in a startup is the balance between being focused and agile. I think when you're in a startup mode, it's unclear oftentimes what is the best strategic path to follow. I think if you understand really what Twitter ended up with and where they started, it's not where they originally had set out to do. It's an amazing story. Same goes really for so many different businesses. I think it's so important to understand that it's going to be messy. You're not always going to have clarity. It's going to be foggy at times. More often than not, and you've got to be flexible in your approach.
Yeah.
But you also have to have clear objectives, and that's a tough balance to work through.
Yeah, and Belinda was shaking her head as you were talking. Some of our listeners know that I do consulting. I do a lot of strategic planning. And so this issue of focus, yet being able to be nimble and sort of go where it makes sense in the market is not only challenging, I would imagine, for the CEO, but you know, for the board to be able to understand that and for your employees to be able to feel comfortable. So if you were going to give our listeners kind of a tip that you use to really help address that, and I'd also be interested in your point of view, Belinda, as well. What's the silver bullet advice you're going to give this morning that's going to open the heavens up and help us all understand how to do that?
That's a good question. I wish I had the silver bullet. One thing that I would say is I would suggest that if you're going down that path of a startup, is that you make sure you align yourself with people that are comfortable in that type of environment, whether it be your investors and whether it be your other partners. I think that's critical to it. And then also your employees. They have to understand that there's going to be uncertainty, and there's going to be times where you feel like All the work that you put in and the investment you made in a particular strategy or a tactic will have to be scrapped, and you'll start over. And so you got to be you've got to be able to be uncomfortable in that environment. I guess one thing that helps bring me back is I was fortunate enough growing up to play a lot of sports and athletics, and I played some football in college, and you know, I was a quarterback, and I was oftentimes thrown into environments where there was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of changes taking place on the other side of line of scrimmage, which you couldn't control because it was the opponent, and if you were able, which is what the great quarterbacks are able to do. Tom Brady is one of the best. If you're able to slow the game down a bit and allow yourself to step back and understand what I refer to as the DMP, the decision-making process, the different variables that you're presented with, and then take that data and try to make good decisions off of it. The challenge in when you're in that environment in sports and challenge you're in a startup, things are in a hyper fast mode, and you can't always call timeout. But the more acclimated you are to being in that type of environment, and I just think there's a certain chemistry, a certain type of people that are comfortable there, and you just need to make sure you surround yourself with those.
Yeah. Linda, what's sort of the way you keep focused but keep agile as you're moving forward with your
Well, I think Chris made some excellent points, but I would also add that particularly as you're starting up, making sure that you are delivering a great product or service, because as people have their eyes on you and you're new, if you don't deliver, it's going to be a lot harder to turn those perceptions around. So number one, making sure you really understand what you're here to achieve, what your vision is for the organization. And I think the point about getting the right people on the team is so incredibly important. We have so many team members who are at Year Up because of the mission of our organization and what we're able to do. But if we weren't doing it successfully, trying to keep the right people on the team, trying to keep the supporters engaged, even the students coming to our doors, you know, they're taking a risk with us to some extent because they're committing a year of their lives. And a lot of them come in and say, it sounded too good to be true. And I wanted to ask myself, what's the catch? And they kept asking themselves, what's the catch, until the day that they started class. And to me, there's a lot of trust that goes into that. And if you do not deliver on that trust, word will get out and get out quickly. So to me, staying focused on what you commit to and delivering on that is essential. But in addition, I think ultimately you've got to stay in your lane. Being nimble is important. You can broaden your lane and say, what else can we accomplish? How do we reach more students faster? But if you start to get too chaotic in your approach, you won't really stand for anything, and you probably won't be successful in delivering great results either. So I think being nimble is definitely important, but knowing where the bounds are, making sure you're continuing to deliver on what you commit to, and then broaden from there and see how you can reapply what you've learned to impact more people. And we're doing that to some extent as well, but you can't broaden too much too fast or people won't know what you stand for.
Yeah. Both of you mentioned that you have partnerships as part of your platform to be successful. So maybe each of you can give us an example of what your product or what your service is and how partners play a key role in that. So Chris, how does that play into what KidsLink provides for your parents?
The just to take one step back, sure, to what Belinda said, because I think she's spot on in terms of the focus and being agile. It's very important that you have clarity on the vision, the overarching vision, and stick with that. How you get there sometimes can change. It's really being clear in that objective, but also being flexible in that approach. And I think that vision is critical, and the vision shapes your product, service offering. It shapes the whole direction and the culture of the company. In terms of partnerships, we do rely heavily on a partnership model. And that's really, I guess, what we would say our point of differentiation is in when we're talking to investors. We're trying to solve a big problem for mom and dad, but parents. And it'll be solved by somebody in the marketplace on a large scale. What we believe is different is the way we're going to go about doing that and reaching mom. We don't believe the best way to reach mom is through traditional media and through other, approaches that successful subscription-based models have built on the internet. We believe moms are, it's important that you build trust and you establish a relationship with them. In marketing of a product or service, especially one that involves their children. And so we've decided to align with what we call a trusted advisor network. Hmm. We stopped and thought, what's the best way to distribute this product and what distribution channels can we best use to get it in the hands of moms? And we think it's best to go to those organizations she trusts the most, which is why we're aligning with hospitals and introducing KidsLink through hospitals and their network, through labor and delivery, through their OB network, their pediatricians. We also believe that preschools, childcare, are organizations that moms trust. So that's one of our channels. We've launched with four preschools just in the last month in Atlanta, and so our channel partners are critical implied endorsements for us in introducing the product to moms.
Yeah, and so Belinda, before I give you an opportunity to talk about how you work with your partners, this gives me an opportunity to ask one of these questions mm-hmm. from some of my friends that looked at the app, and it goes back to this idea of trust. And mm-hmm. one of the concerns that they had is, everybody knows that the world of the internet can either be something that is very useful for you, but it also can be a little scary when your data is out there, and as you said, particularly moms and dads, as they're thinking about, you know, the safety of their child. So
sure.
Give us a little bit about, for that mom or dad that likes the idea of your product but is concerned about putting their data out there for their kids, how do you respond to that?
That's a great question, and that's one that has come up in the past, and it's important for us to establish a trust and a bond with the end user. Ultimately, again, one way we've done it is if hospitals sponsoring it, like our first partner in Rock Hill, South Carolina, at Piedmont Medical Center, and they're a Tenet facility, one of the largest healthcare companies in the world. They're sponsoring it, introducing it through their nurses. There is an element of trust, and they can explain to the fact to the end user that it's their data. It remains private and secure. Mm-hmm. They only share that data if they choose to.
Gotcha.
And that's one critical piece. The other is what we talked a little bit about earlier, too, is about who you align with as partners. My other members of my team, some of the other founders, all come from a company called VendorMate. VendorMate's had a great deal of success in Atlanta. It was an ATDC startup. And VendorMate built a system to manage information on vendors that work with hospitals. And so they have almost 500,000 users in their system of which they have profiles on, and very, very important private secure information to make sure that that the hospital is doing business with people that they can trust. And so this platform that we've built comes from not just experience in the last few years of us building the product with KidsLink, but it spans over a long history of time. Wow. So we take the security very important.
Well, I'm glad that you are able to answer that in a way that I can, if my my good friends that tested the app aren't listening, I'll make sure I get back to them.
Okay,
but
good.
Belinda, likewise, partnerships are really key for you, because without those partners, I would imagine all the education that you give them, they're not able to put in practice. So tell us a little bit, maybe by way of an example that really exemplifies this whole idea of partnership and how you're using it.
Sure. And our corporate partners are one obvious example, but we have partnerships in so many different arenas. As an example, Kaiser Permanente is a corporate partner, so they do host several interns each cycle. And we have two cohorts of students a year, and Kaiser Permanente not only hosts them as interns, but they also provide health coverage for many of our students and some of our alumni, which is hugely important and takes one of those challenges away from them as they're trying to focus on their studies and developing themselves. We also have partnership with the Atlanta Metropolitan State College, who help us offer college credits to our students while they're in the program. They also have stackable credentials, which can help them progress toward an associate's degree. So they might have a credential or certification in technology, A+, and those help them differentiate themselves when they're going to find the full-time opportunity, and it also just prepares them for the real world when they go into the workplace. So those are a couple of examples. We also have a relationship with housing, Bedford Pines, for some of our students. You know, these are young adults, 18 to 24, who have finished high school or have their GED, but may not have the support system that a lot of others are lucky enough to have. And so they may have needs as basic as where they're going to lay their head at night. And if they have a challenge with that, we actually work with them with our student services group. We have a model of high support, high expectations, high support. And our partners are a big piece of that support, including our mentoring program, which includes people from all around Greater Atlanta who say, yes, I want to make a difference in the life of a young adult. I'll spend time with them over the course of the program and give them my guidance and my advice and my input. And I will augment the program you provide to make sure they have the best opportunity possible to be successful. That's all these different partners, including those who offer them the six-month internship, are part of what make this program successful.
Yeah, I knew, as I told you when you came in the studio, I knew a little bit about Europe, but I did not realize that you provided so much of sort of what I would call wraparound kinds of things for those students. And, you know, that's really important that you make sure that you have that strong foundation. Even though, Belinda, you are a nonprofit and KidsLink is a for-profit organization, one of the things that you both have in common, every business does, is trying to raise the money, the capital, to be able to do the things that you want to do. And that's particularly important, obviously, at startup. But I want to talk a little bit about that capital as it relates to you've gotten the door open, you've had some success. How do you continue to position yourself so that you can continue to raise those funds so that it's not sort of a flash in the pan kind of thing, even though it's a great idea? If you don't have the dollars behind it, you're not able to do the things that you want to do around growth. So I'll start with you, Chris, because I would imagine with some of the other things that you've had to do, this area is something you over and over and over again have to address.
It is. And being the CEO of the company, and that's one of your core areas of focus, is the financing and raising the money. Now, what ties together with that is creating value. And so you have to step back oftentimes from the weeds and say, okay, if I'm out looking for the next round of financing, which in our case will be as early as 6 months, what story do I need to be telling then? I've just told a story, and part of that story that I told to raise a most recent round of financing obviously should tie in and to what I'm going to be addressing in 6 months and trying to build confidence in that with investors that we're on the right track. And so, you know, a lot of it is just clarifying, as you said, you've helped companies do, really clarify your strategic plan and your milestones. And not necessarily be forced to identify that you have figured everything out. I think that's a problem for a lot of startups. There's just some answers that you're not going to have. But you want to be able to paint a picture that, okay, we have answered these particular questions. There's still some other ones that we need to address and figure out the best path. But at least we've accomplished what we were trying to accomplish, and it'll get us closer to further clarifying the approach and our go-to-market strategy and refinement of the business model.
Yeah, that's very refreshing to hear a CEO say that, because a lot of times when I do work with leadership teams, you know, at the end of the engagement, they want all the questions answered, and it's really hard to get people to understand that this is about creating a roadmap. And like you said, this roadmap will help you be flexible and be focused because you've got the right vision. But guys, the chances that you're going to have all the answers to this, you know, when you finish your plan is probably not
well. Especially in today's environment. I mean, look at Facebook. A company of that size, and I'm not, I don't know exactly what percentage of their ad revenue was mobile, but it was not a large amount.
Right.
And this was even after they had gone public, and in just a matter, I believe, of 2 short years, they've shifted their model where over half their ad revenue model is from mobile. They had no way of knowing at a particular time that there was going to be that kind of shift and that inflection point where they really, their whole business was being questioned,
right?
Because of the insurgence in mobile. And so if a big company like that, it's far along, has to address those issues and be able to show some agility, you can be rest assured that when you're in a startup mode, you're going to be called up upon to do the same.
Yeah. So, Belinda, the way that you go after financing, so to speak, is similar in concept, but I would imagine there's some things that are different in practice. So for a young executive starting up a nonprofit, talk to us a little bit about fundraising strategy. And it's my understanding you just hired a new director of development, Danielle. Talk to us a little bit about what you have to do to make sure you're on solid footing.
Well, I would tell you a couple of things. First, I think it's important to start off with the fact that we are actually filling a real business need. And when we partner with corporations, some of our biggest advocates are chief information officers. So, for instance, our partner at the Coca-Cola Company is Rob Kane, CIO of Enabling Functions. At the Southern Company, we work with Kenny Coleman, who's also a CIO. We work with Lee Crump at Rollins because they know how difficult it is to get skilled entry-level talent who are professional, capable, committed, driven. And based on our program, we have a very extensive admissions process. As I mentioned, we have 1,200 apply for 170 spots. And then through that, we also have a six-month training program. Not all of them successfully complete the program. In a sense, it's another filter, if you will, for those who are truly committed and driven and capable. So by the time they go to internship, we have taken a lot of the work out of it for the corporate partner. And we've delivered, we do a lot of work on the matching of what the corporate partner is looking for, and we know the students very well by the end of 6 months. So we've had great success with helping take one of their challenges off the table. Mm. So that's one piece, because the corporate internships are about 55% of our annual budget are paid for by the companies because they're getting value. But in addition, we do have, of course, development work as well. And we have support from foundations, from our corporate partners, and from individuals. And it's been growing. We just had a breakfast on November 12th. We had over 230 key leaders listening to and hearing from our students directly and their experience with Europe and how much it has allowed them to change their own lives for the better. And that is really our best sales tool, is letting our potential donors hear from the students and know the results of how we're making a difference. We actually have 83% of our corporate partners tell us that if they would make the decision today, they would hire the interns who are currently on staff.
That's great.
It tells you that it's working. And that's how we're able to raise dollars, because people know they're getting the return on their investment. Within a year, these students, 85%, as I said, are going into a professional position. It's not like an investment they have to make years ago and hope that it comes to fruition over time. We have the results that say if you invest in this program, you're taking what you might have thought was a social liability, a person who you might have felt would turn into a social liability, as a real productive citizen, and you're helping them help their families and impact their communities.
Yeah, I love that both of your organizations take something that is a challenge and people perhaps feel like it's insurmountable, you know, data and paper and how do I keep up with things, there's just not a way to do that. Or, young people that have had some challenges and it just feels like, I don't know what we're going to, do. So both of you have these models that are taking real life kind of challenges and addressing them. And so I'm going to turn it a little bit to the personal and ask you to do a little bit of reflection. So, what is the thing that you've learned about yourself as, let's say in the last 6 months of the work that you've been doing with the startup organization, what's something you learned about yourself that maybe was a challenge, is a challenge, and how you're putting things in place to maybe address them?
That's a little tougher question, so I'm going to let you go first on that one. I'm still learning.
Well, I've been in the role since July 1, so not quite 6 months. But for me, being motivated. We work side by side with the students that I've been telling you about. And that is incredibly motivating because you see the transformation every day and you're very motivated to go out and tell their stories and talk about them and help bring more students in. I think initially because I felt there was so much opportunity to get our story out there and to make sure we're doing as much as we possibly can to support these young adults in their efforts. I think trying to make sure we're prioritizing what needs to happen first, make sure we're delivering on our commitments, and making sure within the first few months, again, you're setting that tone of success and progress and people wanting to be a part of your team. And I think that being around these young adults and ultimately knowing what's going to make a difference for them and for their families. We have one alumni who is now paying for college for his younger brother. He never thought he would be able to do that. Those are the kinds of things that it just pulls you in so many different directions. Which way do you go to make the most impact and just really focusing to deliver as best you can?
So how would you say that, you know, that the myriad of challenges and the need is so great? Give us one tip that you have learned since July that helps you be more effective in addressing that challenge.
I think a combination of both prioritizing what's going to make the most impact and getting the right people focused on those top priorities to make them happen as effectively as possible and as quickly as possible. Because, you know, in a nonprofit arena, resources can be very slim. And the good news is you can still pull together an excellent team because they're so bought into the mission that they're dedicated and they're focused. But everyone is stretched incredibly thin. And just making sure that that they're really focused on the right things so that they are feeling the reward of delivering for these students as well.
So, Chris, you've had a little bit of time to think.
That's
what's
right.
That?
I would say that what I've learned about myself for a large part has been that because I'm in a technology business, I'm back in the technology business, which I haven't been in since the late 90s, is that there's a tendency for myself to try to boil the ocean sometimes, mm-hmm. and try to do more than is capable of doing in order to create the ultimate product for the end user. The danger in technology is you can build anything you want, especially these days. You can build it much more efficiently. We outsource a piece of our development team overseas. And then we also do some stuff here in America, in the United States. But there's a lot of flexibility. And if you get enough user feedback to tell you to go down a particular path, I mean, there's an opportunity to almost to change on a dime and almost be too agile. And so I've learned that just the importance of or be reminded the importance that less is more sometimes, mm-hmm. and focus less on solving several problems, and focus more on solving one particular problem, but solve it very, very well, and I think that's especially important again when you have the opportunity and the flexibility to be agile. That's not necessarily the case when you're involved in let's say, the franchising mm-hmm. world that I had spent time with. I mean, once you built out a concept, it wasn't too easy to alter that, or it took a lot more time. That's not the case. That's not the case in technology. So that's been a good lesson for me to be reminded of.
Yeah, that kind of links back, or at least when you were talking, it links in my mind. I was thinking this idea, sometimes you got to slow down to hurry up. I say that
yes.
to clients all the time. And it's that idea of when you're frantic and thinking that you've got to address everything, mm-hmm. your brain is just reeling. And
yeah.
when you can kind of sit back and say, yes, all those things are still out there, but I'm not going to be able to be effective unless I sort of slow down, and then I'm going to be able to pick up the pace on that particular
exactly.
thing. I would imagine that also brings to mind your point about being that quarterback, where it's all frantic and there's a lot of things going, but you have to, within yourself, kind of just breathe into it.
Yes.
And then decide what the path is. I'm recently a yoga devotee, and so that idea of just breathe
sure.
And then you'll be much more effective. It's something that I'm really trying to learn.
I always love the famous quote from John Wooden, probably one of the most successful coaches of all time at UCLA.
My alma mater.
That's right. Okay, good. He wrote the book, Be Quick, But Don't Hurry.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that goes into that. I try to teach my kids that. And it's just what you're suggesting. I mean, once you figure it out, you can move fast, but sometimes you got to slow it down to figure out the formula.
I think that's true for our teams as well, because there are so many things that need to get done, but just making sure they're focused on the right things. The last thing you can afford to do is have someone spending too much time in the wrong area. Because you can't afford it.
Yeah, you're just burning. So for each of you, talk to us a little bit about how you see your organizations growing. And if I were to say, you know, I want to bring both of you back together in a year, where is it that each of you would like to be able to say that you are and what you've been able to accomplish, particularly related to growth, however you define that?
Mm-hmm.
I'll begin. We actually, in a year from now, we will be on the verge of launching our third learning community, which means we'll increase our capacity to serve students by 50% by March of 2015. And the good news is we know the need, again, it is just dramatic, and the more we can do to help support students, the better. So I didn't mention one of our other partners, but Leadership Atlanta has actually provided us with a team of current Leadership Alumni, Leadership Atlanta class members to work with us and help raise our visibility in the Atlanta community. And primarily the focus is on that, both from a corporate partner standpoint, but obviously to continue to reach out to young adults, because that'll be an additional, we go from 170 to 250. And, you know, we're still trying to figure out how do we do more and more, but the bottom line is, we know there's going to be another 50 or so students each year that are going to benefit from our program. So we're working to build up the capacity from both a financial standpoint as well as a staffing standpoint, building out our space and so forth. So a year from now, I would love to come back and say, we are about to open our third learning community and welcome a whole new group of students into our program. And that's exciting. But honestly, we're trying to even go beyond that. We're looking at other creative ways to, in a sense, expand more dramatically by additional partnerships. And we're looking at the future. How do we go not just from 50 more a year, but how do we increase 100 more a year, 200 more a year? So those are the not too far down the road plans. We're working toward that. So I'm excited. Growing, we know, will just impact this whole community. We're going to make a difference and impact students' lives at the same time.
Great.
In terms of growth for us, our growth is heavily reliant. The success of our business and the growth of it is on our hospital partners. They're such a key component for us and kind of a launching pad as we extend into a market. But when I look at growth as it relates to hospital partners, I'm probably more interested in growing that relationship within that hospital partner and the networks that they touch. And that's what's exciting about the hospitals. As I talked earlier, there's the opportunity to reach their other physician practices that they either are partnering with or that they own now, but they're also heavily involved in the community. And a lot of sponsorships and tie-ins with organizations in the community, whether it be Born to Read, which is an organization that we're working with, or Save Kids. There's another one called Healthy Hometown, and we're working with these organizations within that particular Charlotte market. So I want to grow those relationships. And then also, it's important that we grow our user base of moms and the influencers of those moms. Our blogger network relied a lot on mom bloggers, great influencers. Mm-hmm. But more importantly than numbers and quantity, and this is, you know, some of what the coaching I've gotten from some of my investors, it's that I grow the devout users, that I have a set of passionate users that are engaged in the product, because ultimately, if you have those, they're going to be the best marketing that you can find, the best word of mouth marketing. They're the brand ambassadors. And so that kind of feeds off each other. That'll help me go secure the type of hospital partners we're looking to in other markets. And our strategy is really to do this. Doesn't mean we can't do it concurrently, but our strategy is to do it on a market by market basis. And it's not just to try to spread out throughout the United States, but Atlanta and Charlotte are the two markets where we're aggressively launching now, and we'll have success there and then and add a few as we go.
It's interesting, Chris. You're talking about devout users, and in fact, I mentioned I just came from a 7:30 a.m. meeting prior to the radio program, and it was with our leadership council. And our leadership council are community members who are very engaged and supportive mm-hmm. with Year Up and do so many things on our behalf, really with very little resources from the organization. So just augmenting what we're trying to do, both in terms of fundraisers, in terms of friendraisers, in terms of helping our students network. They actually sponsored an event at Atlanta Tech Village with other technology professionals to allow our students to basically network with them in a cocktail-like environment without cocktails, but shaking hands, mm-hmm. making small talk, getting to know someone, asking for their business card. So in many ways, the Leadership Council is just a great resource for us, and they also brought in really great new players at the opportunity breakfast we had again on November 12th. They were instrumental in helping us introduce more young adults and growing professionals to our organization.
And Belinda, she's spot on. I mean, the value of the network. I mean, what is it? The Metcalf theory is the nodes increase, the value of the network expands exponentially. And I think in today's world, I mean, obviously, when you have a company like Snapchat that turns down an offer for $3 billion right. after a 23-year-old kid,
yeah.
after starting 3 years ago, he's built a pretty big network. I mean, and a pretty powerful network. And that's really the value, because they're not generating a lot of revenue or making much money. It's the value of the network that they have. And in today's world, leveraging that network is there's a high payback on it.
Yeah, and so if I could just piggyback on this topic that you're talking about, network, mm-hmm. Because I think you're absolutely right. In today's fast-paced business, nonprofit, however you want to define the market that you're in, the relationships and your sphere of influence and how you develop those relationships is key. So both of you as seasoned leaders, if you were going to give just one piece of advice to someone that either is trying to make a transition, so they're trying to network into new spaces, or, similar to the people that the students that you work with, I don't really have a network right now, and someone's telling me that's important, but I don't know kind of that very first step that I could take to begin to develop that or enhance the one that I have. I'm giving you some great tough questions here this morning. What would you do? What would you give them?
I have a great example for us and for our staff and our students. For the area that you are interested in and passionate about, for us it's very technology related as well, because our big focus at Year Up is technology skills. And we have partnered with a wonderful organization, which many people know, TAG, Technology Association of Georgia. And as a partner with TAG, our students, as well as our staff, are able to attend one of their many fabulous events to network and to learn about our industry and our arena. We had just attended there are just so many just numerous opportunities. We attended the Excalibur Awards, where different CIOs of companies were being recognized. And being in the midst of the arena and the key players where we want to play and where they want to play, it makes all the difference. And so it's a great partnership. We've met with their leadership. They're very supportive of us. And it's just an awesome way to allow our students to get in the game, if you will.
Yeah, so if I were to sort of broaden that out, in case I have listeners that are not a part of the tech world, I think what I take from that sort of tidbit of advice is, based on what you're either trying to do or you are doing, put yourself in the midst.
Absolutely.
And that by doing that, you'll learn more, you'll meet people, you'll discover new opportunities. But, that old adage is showing up is half the battle. So just find that place that you need to show up and then, start from there. Is that a fair way to articulate the tip?
That is absolutely. For whatever area that it's of interest to you, find the key people who are engaged in that and put yourself right in the midst.
Yeah, in the midst. I like that.
I think that's a great point. And on top of that, I think what I've learned over the years, and I just maybe have learned instinctively, or I maybe witnessed it in my dad. He grew up in the in the real estate business, or I grew up when he was in the real estate business. And there's just some things that he did in residential real estate that I picked up on. And it comes fairly natural for me, and I think it's helped me develop a decent network, is, you know, try to focus on giving more than getting. When it comes just to information and it comes to advice, I think that there's another buddy of mine. I'll put a plug in for him. I think Steve Beecham, his book is Bass Ackwards, and it talks about getting referrals. And his biggest point is, you know, if you offer people connections and open doors for them, it's amazing what'll come back to you. And I find myself taking a lot of meetings that a lot of people might say, that's just not worth it. What am I going to get out of it myself? And just to help in helping other people, or to guide them, or to open some doors for them. And you'd be amazed. I mean, without going in with that as your ultimate objective, the payback is tenfold. And so go in, find, establish those individuals that we were just speaking about, Belinda was talking about, that are key influencers. They'll want to help. Mm-hmm. But then if they've helped you, you have an obligation to go do the same for those that are in the position that you were once in.
And even, you know, the example I gave where our students and our staff are going to gain so much from being a part of these TAG events, the reality is we do offer these major and some not so large organizations the opportunity to tap real talent that they may struggle to find. That's the whole notion behind the opportunity divide. There are far more jobs available than they are able to fill because they don't have the candidates with the skills that they're looking for. And this helps us bridge that opportunity divide.
Yeah, Chris, as you were sort of sharing that, I appreciate that, because obviously both of you are very busy, but to see it from that perspective is very important. And that whole idea of, in any relationship that's valuable, there's got to be a currency of exchange.
Yeah.
And if I'm only focused on what I'm going to get out of you, the currency and the goodwill is very limited. But if I'm more open that this isn't just about what's in it for me, and that there's something that I might have to give in that relationship, then that really solidifies. And it might not be today.
That's right.
Particularly for our younger listeners, you know, we're all trying to make it happen, and we have expectations of things that are instantaneous. But, you know, those of us that have maybe had a little bit more of a seasoned career, you remember that thing that happened, and because you were able to extend yourself somewhere down the line, it came back in a way that was very positive. Well, this has been a delightful addition, and I just want to give each of you an opportunity to any new projects or anything, maybe not new projects, but anything else you want to highlight about what your organization is doing. And then please let's make sure you give sort of a shout out to your organization as to how people that are interested in what you do and learning more about you, how they can reach you. So I'm going to start with Belinda. How do we reach you? And is there anything else that's kind of going on that you just want to give a shout out to?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'll start with how to reach us. And you can go to yearup.org, yearup.org. And even for students out there, or someone who knows someone who needs the hand up, you know, encourage them to apply. We really want to make sure a lot of young adults know about us and are able to take advantage. And the thing that I think I would also leave you with is that for so many people who are working so hard every day, one of the real bright spots is knowing they're making a difference for someone else. And what we also find is that so many people have had what we call their year up. And that might be in the form of just someone taking them to the side and saying, hey, you might want to go down this path. Or, oh, by the way, you might want to consider this. Or, let me take you to lunch and tell you about this career field you're interested in. People get a lot of joy out of sharing what they've learned over time. And in fact, often think about those in their lives who've made a difference, and they want to pay it forward. So to me, getting involved in Year Up, we meet with so many people through this organization that have a heart for giving, but also, again, even for the corporate partners, many of them want to support the community, but they also have the business need. But that combination is what's most powerful.
Great. So, Chris, how do we reach you, and any thing you want to share?
Well, I think the one thing that would help us a lot is if you're a mom or a dad and you want to access a tool we think that can help simplify your world and organize matters for you, we'd love you to go to mykidslink.com. We have a web app now. It's not in the App Store. It's a web app. So if you go to mykidslink.com on your iPhone, you can install the app or even on a Droid device. You can access it there. Or you can access it on your tablet or on your computer. We are about understanding the user and engagement and feedback from moms and dads, because we know, as Belinda said earlier, that the product is critical. And the best way to learn about the product and what we can do to enhance it is from the user. So we would love feedback if on security issues or any other issues that someone might have, and you can send that feedback to us at support at mykidslink.com.
Great.
So,
and I, you mentioned Danielle earlier, and she would have a conversation with me if I returned by not saying you can also contribute to Year Up by going to yearup.org/donate.
Great. So final question. It's one that's a little bit reflective.
Mm-hmm.
Think back to your 20-year-old self. And given what you know today and the experiences that you've had in your career, what would you tell your 20-year-old self if you were giving them advice this morning? Chris, I'm going to ask you to go first.
I'll go first.
You put Belinda on the spot for some of these other tough ones.
I'll take this one. This is pretty simple, and you've heard it a lot, but I'll remind those listeners, and while I remind myself, choose your partners wisely. It's critical. You'll probably spend more time with your business partner than you will your own spouse. Just when you're choosing your partners, just make sure that your values are aligned and you have a consistent vision for where you guys want to take the business. I can't say enough about that. And then, and this is sounds easier than it is hire people that are smarter than you. Mm. Not as easy as it sounds. And you got to be willing to check your ego at the door, and you can't be uncomfortable with people that are smarter than yourself. And if you can do those two things, I think that's a key component. And have clarity on your vision, ultimately, and where you want to take the business. And that vision, you know, constantly share that with those that are associated with your organization.
Great. Belinda, what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
Boy, when I think about being 20 and so much that I did not know at that time, I would tell my 20-year-old self to ask many more questions of everyone I meet, whether it be about professional career, about choices, decisions. And I would also say seek out mentors. And importantly, you don't have to ask someone to officially be your mentor. You can ask them for a little bit of their time and ask them some questions when you're there. And ultimately, you will grow probably into a mentoring relationship. And I don't know anyone who has been very successful who has not had mentors in their lives. And I think particularly for the population I'm thinking about, but for myself in particular, I would say I wish I had known what I didn't know what I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have learned more much faster just by asking more questions.
Yeah, when you're sort of thirsty for knowledge, you are just growing at an accelerated pace. So both of you have been great guests. I've enjoyed the conversation and the insights and also the interaction between the two of you. So next week, Friday, 10 o'clock, join us here where we talk about all things growth. So let's talk about it, because
growth matters.